Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Captain?
Not here.
Captain?
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happened?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons.
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Welcome to the show, Adam.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
You've got beads of sweat on your forehead, the sweat of a man who is picking up dog poop with his bare hands.
Yeah, and then wiping that same sweaty brow with those shitty hands. We got a puppy, Ben.
The puppy is here. It's happened.
The puppy has the upper hand now. This is the third full day of mm-hmm. puppy. And just so much has happened in the last 3 days.
It's really been fun to receive all of the text message updates about all of the highs and lows.
The pictures you get are cute and great. The texts you get are awful and apocalyptic.
They really are. Tell me this, are you going to exploit your puppy for the gram? Is the Greatest Trek Instagram going to get some extra traffic this week because of new puppy?
Oh, that's a good idea. I should post the puppy. Chief of the Watch,
puppy.
Post the puppy.
Does that make Bill Tilly Chief of the Watch?
Guess so, yeah. He has so many titles.
Yeah.
I want to give him more titles, really.
I want him to have like a business card from Uxbridge Shimoda that is like, it's like a bifold. Like you have to fold it down to show all of the different titles that he has.
Like the wallet full of kids' photographs.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe that'll be his business card, just a wallet full of kids' photographs, like the photos that come in the frame, you know?
Yeah, that would work probably.
Yeah, man, I'm not great. I'll admit that, but this is like the growing pains of a new fun relationship, right? Like my wife was telling me this morning that she's improving every day.
Yeah.
She's helping us understand her. And this is just part of the process.
Yeah. Trust the process, Adam.
Yeah. I can't expect her to be a fully formed pupper.
Yeah.
Ready to do all the things right now. I need to go through the puppy boot camp of picking up shit with my bare hands. Everyone's done it. You did it with your dog, right?
Yeah, we got him as a puppy and the first several months. There's a lot of poo-poos and pee-pees in the house.
Yeah.
The key is catching them in the act, you know. Make sure that they know that it's kind of an emergency and that they're at the center of it when that goes down.
Yeah, that's good advice. I mean, there's been a lot
about
of catching
scolding.
The
it's just about getting them out to where it's appropriate to do it, like mid thing.
Yeah, that really brings the forearm into play as far as a place to poop.
Yeah, I my spidey senses are tingling though. That like a lot of people that are like, oh, I know about X topic, and you're doing it wrong, are going to start weighing in.
Oh, cool. So go ahead and add puppy to the muted words list on Twitter. I'm gonna go ahead and do that right now. Yeah.
Well, I'm so happy for you, man. This is
I've seen this puppy through the Zoom calls, and she is a real beaut.
Yeah, she's great. We've had an empty house for far too long, and it is now very full.
a wild swing it's taken.
We're all full up over here, Ben.
Yeah.
I got a diaper pail that I can fill with her poops. That must have really confused the neighbors when that showed up on the porch.
Uh-huh. It's like when you tell people you're sick now and you have to like clarify, not with COVID, I've just got a regular sick. Like, right, I got a diaper pail, not for a baby.
Yeah, exactly. There is obviously nothing like a baby, and I am not trying to claim that kind of valor.
Yeah.
But it's been challenging.
How do the barky across the courtyard dogs feel about this development? Have they taken notice?
Interesting thing about barky across the way dogs is that I'm not really hearing them lately. I think their owner went to work and took them with them.
Whoa.
So we're not really getting the daytime barks that we're used to around here, which I think is a good thing. But whenever we've heard them, my beloved pup, which I should name on the show.
Yeah, toss out the name.
Our puppy's name is Ripley.
The cutest name.
Named after one of the badassiest heroines in all of movie history.
Yeah.
And not, as every old who has heard the name says, Ripley's Believe It or Not. That is not what we named her after.
God, I never even made that connection in my head.
Everyone who's older than us, and I mean even if it's by a year or two, says Ripley's Believe It or Not. And I thought our generation... was the Aliens universe generation?
Yeah.
How could it not be Ripley from Aliens?
I was listening to Judge John Hosbrin recently, and he was talking about an alien action figure that he had as a boy when it was inappropriate for him to have seen Alien.
Yeah. I mean, you could argue that movie's inappropriate at any age.
Yeah. But he's several years older than you. So, like, you would think that... I would have guessed that anybody like 50 and up could maybe make that mistake. I am shocked to hear that it's people slightly older than you.
Yeah, I'm getting it from all directions. Always the explanation, which I'm happy to make because Alien and Aliens are great movies and everyone should know who Ellen Ripley is.
I want to give you a gift, Adam, something that you can say to those people.
Believe it or not, that's not what she's named. We didn't name our dog after a fake museum. That's not a name, it's a dumb tourist trap. Why would you think that? Believe it or not, you're fucking wrong.
Really? Can I, I'm just going to snip that and turn it into something I can play through a megaphone.
Yeah. If you could like have like a shortcut to that on your phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Well, Adam, we got to get into this episode. This is another fast turnaround Prodigy episode. Not getting screeners for these.
No.
And, we're basically reviewing them in protest of that.
It's a classic Ben and Adam, we haven't asked for it and we haven't gotten it sort of...
Feeling resentful.
Sort of resentment happening here.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you'd think we recorded and edited the show in Seattle. There's that kind of passive aggression happening here.
We come by it honestly. We're doing this in L.A.,
Yeah, a couple of super cool Southern California podcasters reviewing a children's show. Today, it's Star Trek Prodigy, Season 1, Episode 3.
This is probably why your neighbors think that you got that diaper can. I heard Adam's gotten into reviewing children's programming for his podcast. No wonder you got that diaper pail.
Its title is Starstruck.
The fact that this is episode 3 blew my mind and made me mad.
Because we were snuck attacked with the first two episodes combined last week?
Yeah, I didn't realize that was two episodes combined last week.
I didn't even find the seam when I was watching it. Was there a seam?
I don't know. It must have been somewhere.
Yeah.
But I guess when you do a two-parter, you know, first episode on DS9, they're never aired separately, right?
I've got a suggestion, Ben. I can really get us out of production jail here.
Okay.
With this idea.
Okay.
So we go back into the project file for last week's Greatest Discovery.
Uh-huh.
We just drop a razor right in the middle of that episode.
And then we release the second half again this
and now,
week.
Now we have two episodes like we should.
That'd be great because I edited that half of that episode. So
you did. Was that the first time we've ever taken an episode both ends like that?
Yeah, we...
Like it is.
It was just like the end of Requiem for a Dream, the way we did that last week's episode.
Yeah. Just as positive for everyone involved.
I'm glad that this is episode 3 because it means you have to edit it.
Oh, ouch.
It picks up right where the last episode left off. It might as well have been a 3-part episode.
The way that the whole thing starts is a lot like how it feels to share a streaming service password or account with a bunch of friends that you're sort of close with.
Right.
Like your algorithm is fucked up. Yeah. Like I got a pre-roll ad for some random Nickelodeon show. Paramount Plus is going to think I'm watching children's programming now.
Yeah, you blew it. You should have made like a separate user account. Like
should have.
We have the Disney Plus streaming service at our house, and we have some friends in the neighborhood who have a young daughter who, I just made her an account, like a separate user on our Plus, because when they come over, she wants to watch like Elsa programming.
Yeah.
And I don't want it to get in there with my continue watching alongside my The Simpsons and No Other Things.
The information superhighway showed the average person what some nerd thinks about Star Trek.
Hey, here's a question. You and your wife have different profiles on streaming services, right?
Generally speaking, we don't.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
This, I imagine, is a point of contention for a lot of couples.
Yeah.
In that, why don't you want the same profile as me kind of form of intimacy?
Yeah.
Where I think that's bullshit. You don't want to fuck up your algorithm, especially if you have different interests in programming.
I will say that on Netflix we do, and I recently made one for myself on Hulu, but more because I'm sometimes going for an older episode of Baywatch than we're currently on to like pull a clip.
Uh-huh.
And it's more about not messing it up that I have to like struggle to use the Apple TV remote to find the correct next episode to play.
Oh, that's a good call. That's a good strategy.
Yeah.
It's for work, babe. I promise. I still want to be in the same algorithm as you.
I'm Catherine Janeway, your training advisor.
This is Hollow Janeway explaining who she is and what she's there for. She wants to know who the captain is. And Gwyn initially claims to be the captain, but following her lead, Dahl kind of self-nominates as captain as well. And says that Gwyn is delirious.
Yeah, I mean, nothing delirious about Gwyn at all other than she being a threat to Dal's command.
Right.
I don't understand why everyone is just eating Dal's shit in this scene.
What's your favorite food?
And throughout the entire episode.
This is a real bad look episode for Dahl. Like, overall, like from start to end, Dal looks bad and looks like a jerk.
Yeah.
I think that it is like justified through character. Like, I don't think it's like bad scripting.
It's consistent with Dal's belief system for sure.
That belief system is very much in conflict with the Federation propaganda that Hollow Janeway or Holloway shares with them.
Right.
Which is she, in response to a question, tells them all about the United Federation of Planets and what it's all about.
An interstellar union of different worlds and species with shared principles of universal liberty, rights, and equality.
Kind of the polar opposite of slave labor prison camp, I guess. So kind of an intriguing idea to most of them. But Dal believes he sees right through this and sees the Federation for the... You know, new boss, same as the old boss vibe that he imagines it to have.
And this influences every choice that Dal makes for the rest of the episode. And right. It begins with, where do you want to go now that you're in space? And you could go anywhere. The pressure in the room is, well, this is a Federation ship. We should take her back home. and get some help, get some defense. Like, by taking the ship back there, our chances of survival increase.
And our chances of having to face the diviner alone decrease.
Right. But Dal sees this as a, I did a bad thing and I'm going to get in trouble for it if I'm caught by the Federation.
Yeah.
Like I stole this car. I can't just return it to the dealership. It's not how this works.
That's not how any of this works.
So Dal sets them on a course toward a red point on the star map that Janeway has made and shuts her off before she can explain why this is a bad idea.
One of the rare set course by color moments in Starfleet.
And then they're going to take Gwen down to the brig, which is... a pretty, like, this is a kid show. This was a very dark moment to me. Mm-hmm. Like, that these characters are so institutionalized that they know only confinement as punishment.
Yeah.
That the first thing they do when they are free is imprison somebody that they're with.
Right. Forced hard labor comes next.
Yeah. I just watched this Colin Farrell movie called, I think it's called Voyagers, that's like Lord of the Flies in space. It's about like kids that are bred in captivity to like seed human life on a faraway planet and start Lord of the Fliesing each other en route.
And, was its working title Blue Origins?
It kind of a bad movie, I will say, yeah. But having recently watched that and seeing this scene, I kind of wondered, like, is Prodigy going to get really dark and fucked up about what, like, Dal is capable of now that there's no one to tell him no?
I'm not going to say no, at least from what we're getting this episode.
There is this, like, lying is bad tension, that conversation that happens on their way down there. Like, everybody else feels weird about the fact that Dal is lying to the ship and lying to them. And it's very, like, very special episode in terms of the way they're talking about it.
He lies all the time.
But it seemed like it could portend something far darker, which I think would be a really interesting direction for a optimistic, futuristic kids show to take a character.
There's a creeping Machiavellian subtext to the thing, too, right? Like, Dal can only take power. Like, power is only taken and is not given.
Yeah.
And so once he has an opportunity to take it, all of his instincts are to do whatever it takes to keep it.
But his instincts are bad. Like, what example of this is that he is standing there talking to Zero about Gwen in the brig, assuming that Gwen can't hear him because there's a force field.
Right.
He's wrong.
Yeah, it's not just Dal making bad decisions, it's Dal being dumb.
And being naive, like he's not worldly in the way that you would hope the captain of a starship would be, you know?
Zero is there to provide some really important context to what is happening here, I think, for a kid. Because if you're taking the scene literally just based off of the dialogue, Dal is projecting an air of confidence. Gwyn is someone who has screwed over the entire crew. Dal's confidence suggests that they are a great leader. But what Zero is there to do is to pop all of the balloons of Dal's confidence by saying, in between all of the dialogue between Dal and Gwyn, just how unconfident he is.
Yeah.
Just how many doubts he has.
He's kind of a fake it till you make it guy. Like his thing about, like, I don't trust this, the Federation, I know from experience. I'm very curious to know what his experience is, like what his life was like before he was in prison.
We weren't so sure he was a one of one as an alien, I think he were a fail son.
Yeah, but like the implication is that they've been enslaved at gunpoint and not convicted of crimes to get landed in this prison. And I think that maybe the thing I'm liking most about Prodigy is that it is coming from a place of imprisonment is bad and unjust, period, standpoint. Like, it is not saying, like, this is different from other kinds of prisons. It's just saying, like, this is not a good way to treat people.
Though it did pull a little bit of a switcheroo about the reasons for their confinement, though, which I think are interesting. Like, I agree with you that that is the case that it's making. But I sure did feel, right or wrong, that this was a prison and not a slave situation, thus saying that they were in trouble for something, whether or not their punishment fit those troublesome crimes.
I think that confusion is intentional because Gwen was very much under the impression that everyone she was participating in keeping there was guilty of something.
I also think if you're a kid, like, I don't know how easy it is to parse that stuff. Like, jail equals trouble for something you did.
Right. But I think the fact that this show is coming from a place of none of these people deserved to be treated like that.
Yeah, that's the attempt to unwind that way of thinking.
It's kind of a radical thing, you know?
Yeah.
So we get a cutaway to the jail itself, and the diviner is suiting up, putting on armor that presumably does whatever that weird lava lamp he lived in before does for him, so that he can go on an adventure to kill everyone, I guess.
Guess so. I mean, you're saying he could have left at any time? Why wouldn't the diviner leave this place as soon as possible? This place sucks.
Just wait till you see the pool.
Well, Adam, you know how, like, a lot of the time you're in the bathroom, but sometimes you're not?
Mm.
I think it's like that. Like, there's probably, like, an interval by which he can leave the bathroom, but he's going to be back.
I think that a scene like this paints the diviner as a pretty bad manager, because I think you need to be delegating the work of the mine to someone like Dreadnought, and then you could hop on the ship and go explore the galaxy as you see fit. This is why the diviner has such a bad attitude. The diviner's not taking time off.
Classic cartoon villain who has incompetent henchmen.
Right, and a bad sense of self-care.
In the galley on the Protostar, Jankum, Pog, and Rock Talk get a crash course in the economics of the Federation.
Money doesn't exist in the 24th century.
Oh, hell, just forget all that and give me a martini straight up with two olives.
It's like home ec is what it is, because it's about how the economics of the future work and also how the food works.
I mean, the other comparison that came to mind was the Lost Boys in Peter Pan. And this is low-key the saddest scene so far in this show, when Rock Talk is unable to and unwilling to try food that is not like what she ate in the prison.
Yeah, this is pretty rough.
She grew up in this jail? How old was she? That's so fucked up.
It's so hard to comprehend that mouth eating that bowl of food. It's just, it's going to haunt my dreams. That Nagila mouth, it's not too late, Star Trek Prodigy, to get those teeth out of there and to choose a non-Nagilam style mouth for Rock Talk. I'd rather Rock Talk has a beak. Why isn't there a beak for Rock Talk? That's what I'm going to ride for.
Wow.
A big rocky beak. Or big craggy teeth like the Chomper in Never Ending Story.
I think those teeth are more upsetting, to be honest.
It's no good, Ben.
Do you think that's grosser, or the blue barf that Murph barfs on Zero in the next scene and it goes totally uncommented on?
Nothing is as gross as the Nutri-Goop that Rock Talk orders. I think it is low-key the most spectacular piece of cartooning in the entire show that I've seen so far. It was glistening and gross and like photorealistic. It was incredible.
And yet somehow less unappetizing than the stuff that Jankum Pog is eating.
I know.
But Jankum Pog is nasty, you know?
Yeah, he'll eat that shit in front of you just to gross you out.
Yeah, he's nasty as hell.
He's doing feats of strength Ben style.
So Zero and Dal and Murph are checking out the sleeping accommodation situation on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lower deck style bunk bedroom, and then Dal checks out the captain's suite, which is a really endearing scene, like an amazing moment of freedom for a character that has been in a pretty dark place so far.
Oh, man! Woo!
I feel like this is the fork in the road of where a kid show and a show for not kids would be very different, because the essential question that has not been asked by anyone on this ship so far is, what happened to the crew?
Right.
Because we are walking around this beautiful ship, a ship that is fairly undisturbed. We don't know how long it's been empty.
Yeah, there aren't like bones or desiccated bodies anywhere.
Yeah. we see all of these bunks, which suggest a pretty large crew complement.
Yeah. It seems like a big ship, right?
Yeah, but the conflict with that is that, you know, the ship can run with just a couple of people. So I'm not sure what's actually happening here, but there is no curiosity about this from anyone. And I wonder at what point we'll get that.
That's in like episode 7.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll be deep into Discovery season by then.
Yeah.
Rock-Tok confronts Gwyn after this scene. I feel like Rock-Tok is really the conscience of the show
mm-hmm.
at this point. And as sad as the scene with the Neutra group was earlier on, this confrontation asking Gwyn why she didn't help them when she had the chance was a real gut punch in its own right.
Why didn't you stop them?
And not really defensible from Gwyn's standpoint. There's the, like, I was just following orders defense.
Mm-hmm.
And the I didn't know what I didn't know defense.
Yeah.
They get tossed out, but it's a bad look for her. And I kind of think that they're setting this character up for some kind of moment of taking accountability
right.
for a bad mistake. Which
Rock-Tok's like, if you're done licking that boot, here's a bowl of Nutri-Goop to tide you over. And that is low-key the biggest fuck you Rock-Tok could ever give, is
yeah,
like serving
yeah.
Gwyn the Nutri-Goop.
Yeah, like, wow, Rock-Tok, you really became what you set out to destroy today, didn't you?
Nutri-Goop looks the same coming out as it does going in.
It sure does. Hey, this ship has two warp cores and a third thing, Adam. What do you think that yeah. third thing's going to be?
Yeah, I don't know. I've been riding for backup warp core for years, though.
Yeah.
Why only one?
Why ever only one?
Yeah.
It seems like...
Yeah. One
like,
is none, Ben.
A great, like, last-ditch weapon also. Eject the warp core.
Yeah, absolutely.
Detonate and warp out of there?
Yeah. It's perfect.
It's amazing. Here's my theory of third thing in engineering section.
Okay.
If those are the warp cores, what is this?
It is a protostar. It is housing a little star the same way that the ship in Discovery in the Mirror Universe was.
Wow.
Some kind of power device.
Oh, like the Mirror Universe Emperor's ship?
Yeah, what the shit was that called?
The Chimera?
The
Chimeron?
Yeah, something like Charon? Is it the Charon?
The Charon! Yes.
It's,
we put
it's,
our heads together on that.
It's the ship that has the kind of bad highlights that's always asking to speak to the manager.
My own theory is this. It is the Event Horizon Drive.
Oh, okay.
That folds space.
They're going to find Janeway having clawed her own eyeballs out.
Yeah. Liberate Etume is coming for Murph.
Wow.
Yeah, they find Murph later, just totally flayed open in the six bay. But Murph's fine. Murph can be flayed.
Yeah, Murph loves being flayed. It's the briar patch for Murph.
Yeah.
Squarespace. Got to build yourself a website if you want to stand out online. Social media websites are not cutting it anymore. And you really can't tell your story, tell the story of what you do, and sell your products or services or time effectively without a really great looking website. Squarespace is the way to do it. Using Squarespace Blueprint, you can choose from professionally curated layout and styling options. You make a seamless checkout option for your customers. You can accept PayPal, Apple Pay, and in eligible countries offer customers the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and ClearPay. Amazing. So head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/trek to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast. And we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second, go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
So they get a red alert, which is that they have encountered a black hole. That red dot was a warning. That's a no-go zone on the map. And the ship is caught in the gravity well, and they can't go to warp because going to warp in a gravity well is bad.
This is not a great time for Dal to make a big deal about his authority, which he chooses to do here.
But this is my ship. I control it. Be gone.
In a series of decisions and orders that are all crap. They are the worst. And what sucks is like the rest of his crew doesn't know any better. Like they don't have any better ideas. So they're just following his shit orders.
He's like,
it sucks.
He's like a populist that gets elected and then just makes mistake after mistake. But instead of recognizing their failure in supporting him as captain, the crew double down on that mistake and yeah, start believing dumber and dumber things.
Yeah, it's a recipe for disaster.
It really is. First thing he does is say, cut power to everything but thrusters. And that cuts Holloway and it cuts the power to the force fields down in the brig. And so Gwen's storyline kind of begins here. She starts her escape. And the first place she heads is where the escape pods are, which I don't think that an escape pod is really where you want to be if you're caught in the gravity well of a black hole.
No, because the way that story ends is Gwen gets into an escape pod and then just goes right into the sun.
Right. There's so, like, I feel like what they are going for here is that it's kind of like funny jokey that every time she tries to climb in an escape pod, it's getting shot out of the ship. And all I can think of is, A, it would be terrible for her to be in one, and B, now the ship has no escape pods. And both of those are bad things that override the comedy of the rug getting pulled out from her repeatedly.
There was one scene in here that was like a wink at the adults in the audience, which was when Gwen gets into the one of the last remaining escape pods and there's a bear in there.
Oh, yeah,
and she
yeah.
sits down on its lap and like tries to buckle the buckle, but it's just the bear arms.
That was pretty good. That was solid business.
Uh-huh.
And she says, fuck, even in the future, nothing works.
Yeah. This seems like, of all of the consequences of Dal's actions, the ejection of everything from the ship seems like the worst thing to happen.
Their
supplies are sent into space.
They're making a great ship into a piece of shit ship in a rapid way right now. Rock-Tuck gets sent down to figure out where Gwen is because they've noticed a power draw by the vehicle replicator. The ship can make its own vehicles on a replication basis.
This was a really creative fight scene. In the classic martial arts style of like fighting in a phone booth size area, this is like that, except the phone booth is being built as they fight.
Yeah, it was really cool. It kind of reminded me of the fight scene in the Lexus factory in Minority Report.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was great.
Or any Jackie Chan movie where like he's like jumping through shopping carts and stuff.
Right. Yeah, but it's like really dynamic, like the nano device that Gwen uses, like turning into a shield at one point, and like Rock-Tuck's arms getting like caught and stuff. Rock-Tuck is a very unwilling combatant. She didn't set out to be a violent person. She didn't like getting sent down to be the muscle.
Yeah.
And this is not
Rock-Tuck's the bouncer with the heart of gold.
Yeah, it's not the role that she wants to play, but also Gwen has wronged Rock-Tuck in a really serious way. So it does kind of boil over and persuade her to really throw everything she's got at Gwen.
Rock-Tuck isn't bad. Her mouth is just drawn that way. I love the idea of a vehicle replicator, and it happens in such proximity to the jettisoning of all of the supplies that it sort of undercuts what an awful moment that was.
It does, yeah. And I wonder, like, does the comedy of just ejecting everything play as just comedy to a kid?
Because there are no consequences.
Yeah. Like kids love like throwing their toys all over a room or whatever.
Yeah. The fight scene inside the shuttle bay is affected by decision making on the bridge because Dal is like cutting off gravity in order to add power to the shields or whatever. Like he's up there giving crazy orders that he doesn't understand the consequences of.
At this point, everybody's floating in the ship and two space-suited anonymous people come on board and murder Chancellor Gorkon.
Yeah. One of the gravity-booted people in there shooting takes a shot at Murph.
Yeah.
And just turns Murph into little blue globules. And they're blue to make the PG-13 rating.
And then the gravity comes back and we see them splat against a ground.
Yeah.
Are we firing torpedoes?
I wish I knew.
This is the moment of desperation, though, because things are so bad at this point that Dal is finally forced to call Janeway back in.
Yeah, I mean, like, chunks of the ship have been torn out by the rocks because the shields are down and all this debris that's in the gravity well with them is hitting the ship. And Janeway quickly explains what to do. They get gravity back, they get shields. Rock Talk comes back up to the bridge, having locked Gwen back up, and sees the impending explodey star on the view screen.
What is that river of fire?
I watched this episode twice, Adam. I could not understand what the technobabble was about at the end of this episode.
In order to get out of this pickle?
Yeah.
I think it was more a metaphorical suggestion than an actual suggestion for a course of action, because like the message here, and boy, oh boy, these episodes are going to be heavy on the message.
Message!
Is that resisting each other is not how you solve a problem. And so their plan was to stop resisting the pull of this star and instead use its pull to slingshot them past it and into safety, in the same way that they needed to stop resisting each other and begin working together.
Yeah.
Right?
I guess so.
I'm not saying that I believe any of that claptrap. I'm saying that's what the show is presenting as an idea.
Yeah. It was also, I feel like, just kind of hard to see what was going on because they're so close to the star that anytime it cuts to the exterior, they're making it look overexposed in the art style.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, I can't even see what is happening. Like, did the star explode or did the ship just like leave where the star was?
Do you think when you're writing for children's TV, you have a little more latitude in the does it make sense department?
I wonder about this. I know a few people that write for animated television shows, and I kind of want to ask about this now.
Yeah.
Because I didn't feel like I was having those kinds of problems with the previous episode, but this one I was just like, I don't, like, what did they just shoot? There was like a wave of red that was coming up off the thing and they shot it for some reason. It wasn't rock. What was it?
Yeah.
Can you shoot fire and make it less dangerous?
I mean, we're going to need to find out with the way that climate change is working.
But anyways, they get away. They either escape the explosion or escape the star or something.
Mm-hmm.
Janeway makes a kind of moral comparison of this motley crew to the early days of the Federation when there were a bunch of different species and cultures and languages that needed to become a cohesive whole or at least learn to work together.
Back when the Federation was started, it was just an excuse for a middle-aged white man to kiss green people. You're doing a lot better than we were back then.
I mean, speaking of Kirk, I kind of think that Dal has some Kirk-y character traits.
For sure, yeah.
To him, so maybe that's where they're headed.
Yeah, Dal and become Kirk.
But if Dal and become Kirk and Gwyn and become Janeway, shouldn't Gwyn be the captain?
I mean, I would be shocked if that wasn't the eventual outcome in as short amount of time as possible.
Yeah.
This is not tenable, this whole Dal as captain thing.
No, Dal is a bad captain. He could be a good XO, though, I feel like.
Yeah, I agree. You could see Dal being a good questioner of authority if were an authority figure installed above him.
Right.
Who do you think is going to make that happen?
No.
I think Rock Talk is being set up to find some sort of goodness in Gwyn. And if Gwyn can possibly win Rock Talk over, I think you win over the rest of them.
Right.
And that may be how it is. But, like, I don't think Zero can do enough here to kick Dal in the balls as far as his authority. Like, this is bad. Dal is doing bad at every turn. And it's not like they even need to be too concerned about the diviner who is in pursuit. Like, they're going to destroy themselves at this rate way before the diviner shows up.
Keep letting Dal make choices.
Yeah.
That's about the most hazardous thing you could do right now.
Right. We see a bit of the kitty working the mines when the diviner takes off. I was wondering if we'd see that guy again.
Yeah, the kitty stays imprisoned. Pretty fucked up. The diviner doesn't just have his own mining operation. He has a scimitar, Adam.
Captain, are you seeing this?
Yeah, and the diviner's been using the crystals, the chimerium crystals from the mine.
Crystals!
To power this cloaking device.
Yeah.
It's pretty neat.
Scary ending to a... episode that almost took the lives of all of the main characters of this brand new show.
Yeah, I mean, those are going to be the stakes every time, right? Isn't that... You know, I was going to say those are the stakes of most children's shows. Like, we've got to save the day, and by the day, I mean my family and friends. Like in a Paw Patrol type of context.
Right, yeah.
But that is also what the stakes are in a show like Discovery. It is always... The catastrophe could affect the entire universe every season.
Right. This seems like more of a Monster of the Week kind of show that they're setting up here. Like, unlike Discovery, I think that there is going to be like a myth arc, but it won't be the main thing that we're dealing with every episode.
Right.
But yeah, Dal's the monster this time. Dal's the major threat to everyone. Yeah. The Diviner wishes he could threaten them the way Dal does.
Yeah, I mean, if we're paying attention to the stock of these characters, Dal is at an all-time bottom here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I would say Murph is neutral. Like, I don't think Murph has moved between last episode and this episode. Rock Talk maybe ticks up a little bit in her willingness to confront Gwyn. Gwyn probably stays neutral, too. She didn't really do much besides try to escape. I'd say few of the characters changed very much this episode.
In the argot of crypto bros, would you say that Rock Talk is the only one that we're going to hodl right now?
Man, I don't even know what that means.
I think it just comes
I'm so not a crypto bro. I like all I know is Dogecoin. That's my only reference.
That's your only pull.
Yeah.
Ethereum, NFT, climate change.
I get those. Yeah.
Elon Musk.
Did you like this episode, Ben?
You know, there were some themes that are emerging in this episode that I think are very interesting themes, and I'm curious to see how they deal with them. I felt like the dilemma and the solution to that dilemma felt a little bit stapled on to themes that I actually think are interesting. Like, I kind of kept wondering about the... Is this Lord of the Flies in space, or is it Peter Pan in space thing?
Yeah.
A lot more than I was wondering about.
It can only be one of those.
Well, I think that that's an interesting spectrum to play within. And
yeah.
I like didn't really care about the black hole. Like, give me a break. Do something interesting if you've got a show.
Yeah. I enjoyed seeing what the serving size was truly meant to be this time around. It felt difficult to judge last week's episodes for it. Because it was so unusual in that way. But this time around, we got the serving size that it's going to be going forward and the level of sophistication that it's going to have going forward. And now I'm feeling like I've calibrated my expectations to what it is in a way that makes it perfectly enjoyable. A buddy of mine called last night, and you know this about me. I'm not picking up the phone hardly ever if I can help it.
Yeah,
but
it makes it maddening to be your business partner.
I'm picking up the phone with you, Ben. And and with many of my friends that we talk exclusively via text with, we have kind of a policy where if I'm calling, it's important.
Mm-hmm.
So this friend called last night, and obviously I picked up because I thought it was important. And this friend put his kids on the phone, and they said that they had just watched the first two episodes of Prodigy, and they loved it.
Oh, cool.
They loved it so much. And these kids are like Star Wars kids. They are obsessed with Star Wars.
You hate to hear things like that.
I know. So maybe they've got a chance now. But it delighted me to hear how much they liked Prodigy and all of the details they enjoyed about it. And it made me feel great that there is now a starting point for a kiddo here in the universe.
Yeah.
And I think that's what you need if you want this. It's disgusting to say the word franchise, but like, I want this world to go on and survive, and it's going to take new viewers to do it.
Yeah.
To keep it growing. And that really made me happy.
That is heartwarming, Adam. You want to see if there's anything heartwarming in the Priority One inbox?
When has that ever happened?
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Adam, our first P1 here is from Brad, Autumn, Sam, Ben T, and John M. And it's to Adam and Lauren. Sounds like a bunch of the best friends of DeSoto right there.
Sure does.
Goes like this. We cannot wait to someday, along with Ben and Adam, teach your child about John Mahoney at Compass Rose, Club Bangers with Alex, how to hold down a huppa in a New Mexico storm, the words to the Tim's Limbs song, and why Star Trek is near to our hearts. You're already amazing people individually and together, so we know you'll be amazing parents. Wow.
Whoa.
Congratulations, Adam and Lauren. That's huge. Did you know this already, Adam?
I gotta admit, I knew about this. Our pals Adam and Lauren had a baby. Adam being one of the great friends of DeSoto out in Washington, D.C. And this message from the rest of our great friends of DeSoto in Washington, D.C.
Man, congratulations. Amazing.
Their baby is why I have not been riding the Peloton bike with Adam as much as I used to, because Adam and Sam and I used to have a nice little thing going every Saturday morning. But now the baby makes that very difficult.
Yeah, you got a puppy, he's got a baby, poo on the floor everywhere.
Yeah.
Not a lot of time to get on that bike.
Poop from coast to coast. Yeah, well, congratulations to Adam and Lauren. Really excited for the both of them. Very sure that they're going to be great parents to this new baby. So Congratulations to them. And if you're, I don't know how early it is to introduce them to Star Trek Prodigy, but maybe now?
Yeah, probably.
When you do that? You want to go bottle to Prodigy to bottle again.
It's the bottle to Prodigy pipeline.
Right. Ben, our second Priority One message is of a personal nature. It's from Ryan from Sacktown. And it is to Ben and Adam.
Hey, that's us.
The message goes like this. Thanks so much for a fantastic season of The Greatest Discovery, covering my favorite new Star Trek series, Lower Decks. Love that show. And your coverage is always great. Helps me notice the little stuff I might not see otherwise. Hope to see you at a live show someday.
Thanks, Ryan from Sacktown. We hope to be out on the road soon. And I think we're going to be announcing some dates in the not too distant future. So if anybody is interested in live shows with Ben and Adam, the best way to get that info is go to gach.biz/mail. And sign up for our mailing list, because that'll be the first place that announcement goes out.
I'm going to go ahead and sign up for that mailing list, knowing that that will be how I hear about the tour dates.
I always like to spring them on you after I tell the friends of DeSoto.
It's because I don't pick up the phone, Ben. I did it to myself.
If you'd like to send a P1, you could do it. Just go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, sign up there. This show could use your support, and that's a great way to do it.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you discover yourself an Edward Larkin?
I think it's got to be Dal this time for me. You know, one of the things that is the least relatable about his character to me is that he's brimming with self-confidence. Like, he'll walk into a room and be like, this is my ship, I'm captain.
Right.
I would walk on board that ship and ask permission from the hologram to pick a bunk bed, you know?
Right.
So the combination of confidence and incompetence being the danger that it is makes him my Edward Larkin.
The combination of confidence, incompetence, and incontinence is often where I'm at. Pick two, Ben. I'm with you on Dal, but something I wanted to interrogate about him, W/R/T, Edward Larkin, and Shimoda. And Jim Shimoda himself was like, the degree to which there is harm being intended. Jim Shimoda never intended the harm he was doing on the D back then. Edward Larkin seems a far closer analog to Dal here than maybe anyone else, because Larkin's in it for himself in the way that Dal is.
Yeah, I mean, Dal, interestingly, is the only character in this episode that is depicted as having fun. I guess Jenkum Pog has fun at the replicator, but Dal's little moment in the captain's quarters was a kind of selfish type of fun that I don't feel like is very endearing.
Right.
Like, you can understand why that is fun for him, but it's also like a scene where he like slams the door on Zero, you know?
It's a real lack of being able to read the room that can usually only be measured in Barclays, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, Star Trek is often a show where the episode feels like a little bit of a light morality play. Mm-hmm. And that's also something that is often true of children's programming. And I think it's kind of interesting that this character is being made as unlikable as he is right now, because I'm sure that some comeuppance or big grand realization is coming for him. But right now it feels like they are digging the hole.
Oh, yeah. Hard to imagine how much more digging there is to do here. I mean, how much worse could Dal do besides killing Murph or something?
He tried to when he flayed Murph, but that was just fine by Murph.
You don't want to see Murph's log from this episode. Just a totally horrible montage of grotesqueries.
Yeah. All right, Adam, that just about does it for this episode of The Greatest Discovery. We will be back next week with another Star Trek Prodigy episode, possibly some comics, right?
Yeah, I think that's the case. For right now, though, we're going to get some of the best credits I know I've ever heard.
Oh.
By the best creditsman in the game.
I'm just trying, man. I'm just trying to leave it all out on the field. You know what I'm saying?
At one point, I claimed to be the better creditsman, and like Michael Jordan in the Michael Jordan documentary, you took that personally.
I haven't seen that Michael Jackson documentary yet, but the one thing I do know is that The Greatest Discovery is an Uxbridge Shimoda podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. Our music is by Adam Ragusea, our music buddy, who is also the proprietor of a great YouTube cooking channel. Just search Adam Ragusea over there on YouTube. We're on Instagram and Twitter at Greatest Trek, and those accounts are run by the Chief of the Watch, Bill Tilly. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, maybe recommend the show to a friend or listen to our other smash hit Star Trek podcast, The Greatest Generation. We just made an episode of that show that's especially intended for first-time listeners, so it's a great place to jump on board. That's at bit.ly/TGGwelcome, all lowercase. Okay, that just about does it for me. We'll be back next week with more of The Greatest Discovery.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.